ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So this morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 2, entitled Hiranyakashipu, King of the Demons, text 44. Suyagyo nanu ayam shete mudham yam anushochatam yaham shrotam yaham anuvaktam iha saham na drishyetam karhichit. Suyagyo nanavyam shete. Suyagyo nanavyam shete. Mudayam anushochatam. Mudayam nanushochatam. Yashrotayo nuvaktetam. Yashrotayo nuvakteha sanadrishyeta karhichit. Sanadrishyeta karhichit. Suvagyo navnayam shete mudama manushochatam. Yashrotayo nuvakteha sanadrishyeta karhichit. Suyagyo manavyam chete mudayam anushochatam. Yashrotayo nuvakteham sanadrishyeta karhichit. Suvagyo navayam chete mudayam anushochatam. Yashrotayo nuvakteham sanadrishyeta karhichit. Okay. Yep. Suvagya, the king name Suvagya. Nanu, indeed, I am this. Shete, lies, mudhaha, O foolish people, yam, whom, anushochata, you cry for, yaha, he who, shrota, the hearer, yaha, he who, anuvakta, the speaker, iha, in this world, saha, he, na, not, drishyata, is visible, karhichit, at any time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you're all fools. The person named Suvagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. Then what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you're lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. For you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. There is no need for your lamentation, for the body you have always seen is lying here. Purport. This instruction by Yamaraj in the form of a boy is understandable even for a common man. A common man who considers the body, the self, is certainly comparable to an animal. Yasyatma budir kunapetri dhatuke sa eva gokaraha. But even a common man can understand that after death a person is gone. Although the body is still there, a dead man's relatives lament that the person has gone away, for a common man sees the body but cannot see the soul. As described in Bhagavad Gita, Dehinosmin yata dehe, the soul, the proprietor of the body, is within. After death, when the breath within the nostrils has stopped, one can understand that a person within the body, who was hearing and replying, has now gone. Therefore, in effect, the common man concludes that actually the spirit soul was different from the body and has now gone away. Thus, even a common man, coming to his senses, can know that the real person who was within the body and was hearing and replying was never seen. For that which has never seen, what is the need of lamentation? Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalaka Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namo Vishnu Paraya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tiname Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shosadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Svagyuna vayam shete mudamam yam anushochata yashrota yonuva kteha sahna drishyata karhichit. Yamaraj continued, O lamenters, you're all fools. The person named Suvagya, for whom you lament, is still lying before you and has not gone anywhere. For what is the cause for your lamentation? Previously he heard you and replied to you, but now, not finding him, you're lamenting. This is contradictory behavior. For you have never actually seen the person within the body who heard you and replied. There is no need for your lamentation, for the body you have always seen is lying here. It's a very instructive verse, pointing out that obvious difference between body and the soul. So obvious that many times things which are so obvious we just fail to perceive. So in a very powerful manner Yamaraj is instructing here the queens of the kings who Yagya. And as we know, Yamaraj is one of the 12 Mahajans, is the very exalted devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Definitely he has a lot of realization between that difference between the body and the soul. He's the one who is judging, he's the one who takes the living entity and promotes him up to the higher planetary system or lower planetary systems, and he is the one who witnesses so many different kinds of positions that living entity has to undergo, especially in the lower planetary systems or hellish planetary system, where living entity endures various kinds of sufferings and even dies due to pain and torture and suffering, but still actually never dies because the soul can never die. So very often even the living entity has to be punished in the same way many, many times over and over repeatedly, but still it never practically dies. It kind of dies, but it doesn't die. That's another kind of contradictory statement that we may kind of think of. But actually, it is not contradictory because soul never dies. But the experience is that of a dying. So living entity does experience that as something factual and is affected by it. But just because he identifies with that particular subtle body that has been put in various kinds of difficult conditions in those hellish planetary systems. So Yamaraj definitely is a Mahajan. He knows very well that the basic foundation of spirituality, which Krishna, as the first lesson, is teaching Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, that you are not this body, you are the spirit soul. So very interestingly, even demons like Hiranyakashipu would utilize any kind of philosophy to achieve their means. And they would definitely use philosophy, Vedic philosophy. They would be very expert, like we know Ramana was expert in chanting, Ramana was expert in so many different kinds of rituals and yagyas, and he had so much incredible knowledge that even demigods have been attracted to it. So knowing about the Vedic scriptures and quoting the Vedic scriptures as Hiranyakashipu is doing here, you know, we may think that, you know, even a demon who has such kind of a knowledge, that he's such an exalted personality, that actually he is a devotee. He's talking something here that, you know, practically all the devotees are talking about. This is Vedic philosophy. So here is something that we have to stop a little bit and reflect and analyze and try to actually see. Again, kind of a point, seeing but not seeing, pashyatina pashyanti, as it is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. Kind of seeing something but not really understanding. Same point here the Yamaraj is bringing out to the queens. You're seeing something but actually you're not seeing the soul. You're not understanding what is going on. So in a similar way, like this, we can perceive somebody talking about high Vedic philosophy and consider that person to be very learned or very authoritative, or even to the extent of considering that person to be a devotee, but actually that's something that we can be pretty heavily misguided with. So that's what we have to be careful. Even though the demon may quote and utilize and speak very exalted philosophy, doesn't mean that he's a devotee. We know that Varnashram Dharma has been previously practiced by everyone. So Varnashram Dharma as a system, it's a wonderful system of, it's a social, wonderful social system, but it is utilized equally by the demons as well as the devotees. And demons definitely derive their powers from following the principles of Varnashram Dharma. But then, in that sense, when they present Varnashram Dharma, when they follow Varnashram Dharma, when even they speak wonderful philosophy and present all kinds of different arguments, they're not necessarily devotional. Therefore, that kind of Varnashram Dharma is Asuri Varnashram Dharma, it's not Daivi. So they can also utilize so many principles, Vedic principles and teachings, for their own selfish purposes that has nothing to do in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know that Varnashram Dharma in itself elevates one to the higher levels of consciousness gradually, but it's not in itself a mean for spiritual realization. Spiritual, it's not just in a sense, as we know, the realization here of which Hiranyakashipu is speaking, it is pretty exalted. We may say it is exalted level of consciousness. It's the level of Vijnana Maya. It's not just Jnana Maya. Like as we know, there is Anamaya, Pranamaya, Manomaya or Jnanamaya, and then Vijnanamaya. Vijnanamaya means that is where the spiritual life really begins. Understanding of difference between the soul and the body. So in that platform we can understand, at least if Hiranyakashipu is quoting even Yamaraj as such, and to some extent we may consider that he had understood that principle of difference between body and the soul, but actually through his activities we can understand that he factually didn't understand the difference between body and the soul. He didn't understand that he is immortal, because he wanted to become immortal. He was praying to Lord Brahma for immortality. That means that he didn't understand as a spirit soul that he is immortal. That means actually this knowledge is not knowledge on the platform of Vijnanamaya, but it's platform on the it's the knowledge or consciousness on the level of the Jnanamaya or Manomaya. It's just very dry theoretical presentation that he's exhibiting here. Because Hiranyakashipu very strongly identified with his body. He had received very beautiful, very powerful, very, very, very strong and amazing, attractive body that Lord Brahma has granted to him. And he was definitely identifying with that body. And he knew that, you know, I don't want to die. He knew at some point that death will come. So that means if he had that kind of consciousness of knowing that death will come but still identifying with the body, if he would have really have realized that he is not the body but the spirit soul which is eternal, he wouldn't have been afraid of dying. He wouldn't have been asking for all of these different boons to secure so-called his immortality. But he asked it still anyway. So that means it reveals that he wasn't on Vijnana platform of consciousness. It was just on the platform of Jnanamaya. So he was trying in so many different kinds of ways, as we know, to become immortal. So he is still preaching, he is presenting this philosophy. As we said, even Ravana and so many other demons, Jarasandha, they gave in charity and so many different ways. So many demons have been following Vedic culture and Vedic, you know, utilizing Vedic philosophy, but for their own selfish purposes and for the purposes of exploiting others. So when demons misuse their powers, which they gain through such kind of practice of the Vedic principles, then Krishna has to come and bewilder the demons and even sometimes fight and kill them. So there are different ways and means that Krishna is then yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharatad bhutanam madharmasyantadatmanam srijami aham, appearing and bewildering the demons, first of all to reject the Vedic philosophy, to reject the Vedic dharma. He appears as a Jaina and as a Buddha, presenting those kind of philosophies or Kaitava Dharma principles. And then that's on philosophical level. And then on the practical level, he incarnates like here in the seventh canto, either as Nrsimhadev or late, earlier on as it has been mentioned as a Varaha, to just directly, you know, kill them, relieve them from that direct identification with those particular bodies that they had, those powerful bodies that they had. So Krishna acts in various manners in this way, giving his mercy also to the demons as such. So the idea of Hiranyakashipu quoting Yamaraj, it shouldn't be misleading in this way, misunderstanding his real position. This is what we shouldn't mistake at any point and should try to understand how actually, definitely, even if Hiranyakashipu is quoting Yamaraj, who is an exalted devotee, to that extent, yes, we can say we can give him a credit. But we shouldn't be misled by further on, you know, utility or principle that Hiranyakashipu is trying to achieve, you know, for his own selfish purposes or demoniac purposes. Many times we will find in this world so many people quoting so many different exalted personalities, but then misusing this. This is something that in Bhakti Shastri study, for example, you know, it's called academic integrity. When somebody misquoting and misutilizing some particular valuable and authoritative statements, but for completely different purposes than what they're really meant for. So when we come across such kind of statement, therefore we should be careful how to relate, how to understand them, and how to basically understand as well the position of the person who is quoting. This is why it's not just sufficient to present some kind of theoretical knowledge, But it is important to present the knowledge to some kind of at least realization. Then it has a weight, then it has a potency, then it has a meaning. So Hiranyakashipu, we can see, was definitely very well versed, and we know he had the most exalted of the preceptors in that practice of Arnashram Dharma, Shukracharya himself, who is, even Krishna is saying that, pointing out in Bhagavad Gita that I'm amongst the, I think of the sages or something, I'm Shukra, right? Does mention something like that. He's mentioning Shukracharya. So he's very exalted personality, definitely. But he's just teaching something related to the material principle. Something mostly related to the body. Again, even if the soul comes into the picture, as we know that story of Indra and this is from, I think it's Katha Upanishad. Who was that? Virochan, when they came to Brahma to study about the self, to try to understand the self. So Brahma was testing them. They were first menially serving for thousands of years, because that's the way the knowledge is passed through the menial service, seeing whether somebody is sincere and dedicated and really wishing to understand the higher principles of existence. So then once they passed that particular period of time serving Lord Brahma, then Lord Brahma agreed, okay, I will give you the knowledge. But he gave them just partial knowledge. He just said, he brought them in front of the mirror and he said, this is what you see, this is who and what you are. And then Indra saw himself and Virochan saw himself in the mirror, and Virochan saw his garland, he saw his cloth, he saw his, you know, very nice crown and his shape of the body and everything. And he said, hey, I knew that immediately. I knew that from the first place. I'm who I, you know, I'm just who I'm seeing. I'm this body. I'm who I am, like this, in such a particular way. And he said, I didn't even have to waste time, you know. I knew that from the beginning itself. And then just Brahma said, this is it. I just gave you the, you know, the most exalted knowledge of the self. And Virochan was just immediately satisfied and he just left. And propounded that kind of that information to the demons. Whereas Indra also left back to the heavenly planets, but then he was thinking, it doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense that, you know, I am this particular body. Indra was just kind of a little more contemplative. He just couldn't accept it as a fact that this is all in all. And then he came back to Lord Brahma, he offered obeisances, and back he said, he revealed his doubts. And Lord Brahma said, okay, now you serve for another few thousand years, and then we will see. And sure enough, Indra did become so submissive, and he served for so many thousands of years again. And then Lord Brahma imparted him even higher knowledge. And then even after that, he imparted him higher knowledge. Anyway, there's a whole story going on. But ultimately, essentially, Lord Brahma told him that there is absolute dead difference between soul and the body. Soul is not the same as the body. As we know, what Krishna is describing here in the Bhagavad Gita, so many differences between soul and the body. Soul is eternal, body is not eternal. Like Sat Chit Ananda, Asat Achit and Nir Ananda. So many various differences. There's one interesting commentary of Ramanujacharya, where he also talks about those differences between body and the soul. He said that soul can pervade something, some particular element, whereas material elements cannot pervade anything. They can be pervaded. And of course, you know, soul is conscious, body is not conscious. He also interestingly said that body itself is very complex in a form. It contains so many different kinds of things, whereas the soul, it's not complex. It's just one material. It's a spiritual. It's just consciousness. That's another interesting difference. And another point is that the soul is conscious of that particular thing that it pervades, or that particular field, like Krishna is describing in Bhagavad Gita, field of action. That he is knowledgeable, whereas the body serves as the object of the knowledge or perception when the soul identifies with it. There is a difference. So body is just an instrument, whereas the soul is one which knows the principle, which knows the thing. So that field of the knowledge is also very important. It's interesting, in one conversation, Bahulashva once asked Srila Prabhupada, so what is that difference between soul and the body? How can we tell, you know, the difference? And interestingly, Srila Prabhupada points out, he said, we can tell the difference, like you can see when there is some particular field which is not cultivated. You know, when we go to the village or somewhere out, you know, some rural area, and then some field which is not cultivated, that means nobody lives there. No living entity is taking place of that particular piece of land. You know, so many creepers are there, it's just, you know, so many bushes, and, you know, it's just really wild, you know, life, to so to say, and wild kind of things growing there. So it's obvious and so easy to say that there's nobody who is taking care of that particular field. But whereas you come across some field which is very nicely cultivated, and there are so many different kinds of things happening, and you can see, you know, some plants growing, and there are no weeds and stuff like that, you can understand there is a person who lives there, who, you know, takes care of that particular field. So in a similar way, once you see the body which is decomposing, rotting, or, you know, whatever, and so many different kinds of things come out of the body also, you know, after the soul leaves the body, you can understand there is no living entity, nobody is inhabiting that particular field. But when there is a soul, then it's so easy to understand that actually there is a living entity, there is a being, somebody inhabiting, pervading that particular body, which is taking care of that field of action. It's a very obvious difference. Soul is not perceivable directly unless we have that knowledge about a soul. Like most often we can see, interesting example is, usually what we do perceive, and this is something I hope will just come quickly and explain a little bit later, what we usually perceive is just very superficial. Superficial perception of, you know, somebody's existence, which is manifested just through the body, or particular qualities that anybody might be having. They're just manifested through the particular type of body. The example in Srimad Bhagavatam is given that as the different types of fire emit different kinds of fragrance, smoke, and shapes of the fire. So when the fire is present, when it's burning, when that wood is burning, it just emanates different kinds of quality according to the shape, according to the type of that particular wood. So in a similar way, when the soul is inhabiting some particular body, so that according to the type of the body, shape of the body, then those kind of qualities will be emanated. And this is usually only thing what we perceive. So we don't really, like it is stated here, we don't perceive the real entity, we don't perceive the real soul. What we perceive is just how the soul emanates or just shines through or reflects in a way basically that particular body that it's inhabiting. This is all what we see. And all the changes, soul is not affected by any kind of change of the body. It has really nothing to do with any kind of change of the body. We know of Prabhupada talks and we know from the Shastra, there are six type of changes that the body is undergoing. Birth, growth, you know, maintenance, byproducts, dwindling and death. Soul has nothing to do with any of those things. Soul is eternal. It doesn't undergo practically any kind of change. But what is changing? It's the body. We know the principle of conservation of energy is there, yes, but the energy is changing, but it's still remaining the same as the energy, in that sense. So energy or the soul remains the same, but what is changing and what is transforming, it's what is in relationship to that energy. Any other particular gross element is disintegrating. Principle of entropy. Things are disintegrating. Things are falling apart, but energy is conserved. It remains the same. So, similar way, the body is falling apart, the body is disintegrating, but the soul is never factually really affected by it. Interesting, another example is given in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is said like a moon. You know, when we see the moon waning and waxing, 15 days back and forth, we can see the changes on the moon. Is the moon affected by those changes? Actually, it isn't. Of course, there is a story of Daksha cursing the moon and moon being affected like that, but In essence, the moon is, of course, if the moon or Soma would be identifying with the planet moon as its itself, like we identify with the body, and in that sense, yes, then definitely he would be affected. But in essence, when we speak about moon as a planet in itself, moon is not affected by any kind of change. By the waxing or waning, moon is not affected. It's just our perception, it's our wrong perception that we consider that moon is affected. We just see the waning and waxing. That's all. That's our misconception, misperception. As the ladies here, or the queens of this queen, they were just misperceiving, so to say, you know, the position of the real entity, the real soul, which has been described here that it left the body. This was their misperception. But the soul is never affected by any condition of the body, as the moon is not affected by waning and waxing. And then what is compared to the death? It's like when Rahu comes and swallows the moon. Rahu actually really doesn't swallow the moon. But from our point of view, from our perception, it does cover it for some time. So that transition from one body to another, transformations are like waning and waxing, but the transition from one body to another, it's like Rahu swallowing the moon. And that moment of changing and, you know, new moon's appearance, you know, this is something that then in that sense we consider like, you know, appearance of the soul in another particular body. So that's a big difference. So this kind of knowledge, so it's very interesting that, as I said, the Hiranyakashipu has such a kind of exalted knowledge at his hand that he can quote, that he can pacify the queens of Hiranyaksha when Hiranyaksha has been killed, and also utilize this particular philosophy to make them understand that soul is not dead, but the body is just kind of a gone. But still we see it's mostly kind of a dry. I would say that is at least my realization from what I understood from here. It's pretty much, it's just theoretical knowledge. It's not really a realized knowledge. Interesting thing related to this, in one of the Puranas I have read, that Hiranyaksha also was very learned. And he also understood very, very much the principles of Vedic principles, Vedic philosophy. Of course, as the time, that particular time the case was. And he was still practically a devotee. Like when we know giant Vijay's story, when they were cursed to become, you know, and they accepted the position of becoming a demons for three lifetimes. Initially, Hiranyaksha was still a devotee. As a very nice pastime, when he just started performing different kinds of austerities. He wasn't so demoniac. And this is revealed through that particular story where his mother, Diti, she's approaching him and requesting him, please don't perform all these kind of austerities. Why do you want to perform all these kind of austerities and torture your body practically? And, you know, like, you know, it's not so necessary. And she's kind of very worried, like any mother would be worried when their children, you know, start performing, maybe even, let's say, spiritual life or whatever. It's just kind of, let's say, natural parental, you know, affection and concern. So she was very worried about, you know, Hiranyaksha performing different kinds of austerities. But then, what is interesting enough is that when Hiranyaksha replies and he starts preaching to her, that actually, again, we are not this body, we are a spirit soul, and you shouldn't worry, but you should just take shelter of Vishnu. Can you imagine Hiranyaksha talking to Diti and telling her, you just take shelter of Vishnu? So it's an interesting how actually that transition from, you know, being a devotee to become a demon, actually it was a gradual transition. It wasn't just immediately Hiranyaksha was born, you know, and then he was just exhibiting demoniac consciousness immediately. Well, he did. Of course, our explanation from the Shastric explanation would be because at the particular time that of his birth and conception that affected the consciousness, his consciousness and consciousness of his parents, of course. But anyway, at least the point is that transition was gradual. So at that point still, you know, his consciousness is pretty much Vishnu consciousness. And he's instructing his mother to take shelter of Vishnu. And most likely, you know, we can assume as he gained the power, you know, as anybody in this world can be tempted by gaining any particular position, but gaining any kind of influence over others, to develop some kind of pride, arrogance, and exploitative, that kind of demoniac quality or spirit. That usually something that definitely can happen. So that transition was gradual transition. So he had that knowledge. He had still some about different soul and the body, between soul and the body, and he had definitely still some affection towards Vishnu, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So coming back now to the verse, it's what is interesting is that now again Yamaraj, he is here instructing Hiranyakashipu, is telling this story, because as we know, it's always telling some kind of a story, relating it to the real event. It's very powerful, confirming with some other examples, you know, authoritative that has taken place in the past. So he's saying, you're all fools, because you're lamenting for something that it's not worthy of being lamented for. Same thing, like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna saying to Arjuna, Ashochanan vashocha stvam pragyavaram shabasha se gata sunagatasum shananu shochanti pandita. Nanu shochanti. All this lamentation and pandita. You're acting like a big pandit, you're speaking big, big learned words, but actually you're a fool. You don't know the essence. There's nothing to be lamented for. Because soul is something you can never kill. And body is something that it's never going to last. Dhruvam janmamritasya cha. What is that verse? 2:16. Jatasya hi dhruvam ritur dhruvam janmamritasya cha. Soul, it's eternal. It's never perishing. It's never going to perish. And body has no existence whatsoever. It's always dead. And the seers who have seen that true are never bewildered by that fact. So that's the nature of the soul. This is the nature of the body. Once we understand this, there is nothing to be lamented for. And this is the same thing, like also Krishna is teaching Arjuna in that Jnana Yoga portion of the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, is emphasizing this basis of spiritual life, foundation, that unless we understand this, whatever we build upon that is just going to crumble sooner or later. Like we see nowadays so many different kinds of, you know, religious practices in the world. People talk so much about religion, this and that, but it's all based on the body. It's just, they don't have proper foundation. You know, if they still identify with the body and consider their comfort, their family, their position in this material world, and then talk about spirituality, it's all useless. Then it's as it's proclaimed in Bhagavatam, it's Kaitava Dharma. Until person starts really understanding and realizing that, hey, I have nothing to do with the body. I have, you know, when we talk about spiritual life, then we should know what the spirit is. What the soul is, what are its qualities, and therefore who we actually are. So once that understanding is in the place, then we can talk about spiritual life, and then building it higher, 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 and higher, and higher. You know, then we can, you know, do something, you know, we can progress in spiritual life. But unless that conception is cleared out, there is no question about it. So many times also devotees would ask, why we discuss so much a soul? It's so clear, we are not the soul, you know, we are not the body, we are the spirit soul. But are we acting on the platform of the soul? Definitely we don't. Like to get up early in the morning, you know, soul doesn't sleep, soul doesn't get tired, you know, soul doesn't have a difficulty to, you know, just jump out like a, you know, like a spring up like in an instant. No, but we have a difficulty. Why? Because we still identify heavily with the body and conditions of the body. So if we would have that realization that we are not spirit soul, you know, we wouldn't have any difficulties in acting on that platform of the soul. Just like Parikshit Maharaj and Shukadev Goswami here in Srimad Bhagavatam, 7 days, no eating, no sleeping, absolute absorption in hearing the Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Katha. That's the activity on the level of the soul. So, you know, whenever we hear about those differences, we have to keep on hearing. And that's what Prabhupada would always emphasize. What's the point of discussing some exalted topics of spirituality and philosophy until we understand this basic, you know, philosophy? That is, you know, we are not a material body. We have nothing to do with this body that we inhabit, that field that we inhabit and cultivate, so to say. We have nothing to do with it. That's why we have to keep on hearing. And then from that level of Jnanamaya, at least we come to the level of Vijnanamaya. And then Ananda is just the next step to it. We have to keep on hearing over and over and over. And that's why Prabhupada was so often talking, you're not his body, you're not his body, you're not his body. And then there is that interesting one question that was asked by one devotee. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you're talking so much about we are not this body, we are not this body. Can we hear something else? The Prabhupada got upset, you know, hearing what? Something else. Did you realize that you're not this body? The devotee definitely said, I didn't realize. And so Prabhupada said, if you would have realized that you're not this body, you know, and you have realized that you're not this body, then why are you still attracted to the other bodies? It's a very powerful reply. So if you're still attracted to other bodies, you know, it means we didn't realize that we are not this body. And so we have to keep on hearing it over and over and over. But for that, it requires a practice. It requires, you know, some understanding. It requires realization, which comes in the course of time of devotional practice. And then we can have that realization, because again then, like here, all these relationships, this is something that I really wanted to touch upon a little bit. This is the essence of this verse, which I think it's pretty powerful for that sense. Because all the relationships that we have here in this material world are based on just that material platform. Or let's say even, you know, subtle emotional, mental platform. Nothing beyond that. So once we deal with each other or we deal with anybody else, this is all that we are dealing on. We are just dealing on the temporary material platforms. Either you may call it subtle, or be it a subtle or be it a gross. That's all. And we think, I know this person by what? Just by particular gross manifestation. Like we said, something like that burning wood, that example. We don't really know the fire. We don't know, we don't know the energy. We don't know the source. We don't know the essence. We just saw see and deal with a particular manifestation of it, which is changing anyway. This is why the relationship don't last, because things do change in this material world constantly due to the influence of the time, the most powerful force that nobody can stop. In the course of time, everything will crumble. Nothing can remain. Even atomic power of the atomic bomb cannot, you know, create such a disastrous effect as the time can. Even then, when something blows, you know, something still remains, and, you know, but, you know, when the influence of time is in place, there's nothing that's going to remain in this world. So due to that influence, everything is changing, especially in terms of different relationships. If we base our relationship, and this is what's going on, this is what we can so obviously see in this material world, all the relationships that are taking place are just bodily relationships. That's why it doesn't work. No relationship practically works. There's no satisfaction. There's going to be always some frustration and disappointment and separation. Because it's just very superficial. Very superficial. Just so gross. Or even if it's subtle to some extent, some emotional attachment, if it might be there. Even that, you know, it's kind of love-hate, it can be kind of relationship. Some realization. But still, attachment is very strong, you know. It's very difficult to cut it out. But you might be having so many negative experiences, even in the course. Why? Because we are not, you know, nobody's on the level, relating on the level of the soul. And this is why this society is here for, you know, to try to bring that particular type of relationship between soul and the soul, and the other souls in the service of the super soul. That's what the spiritual life is all about. And this is what Yamaraj is basically pointing out. He said, you know, you're just lamenting. It's useless. What are you lamenting over, you know? You've never even known that person that you were, you know, associating with. So why are you lamenting now? What are you lamenting for? Something that it's changeable, something that changed, something that won't even exist, which is a body, you know. And he said, it's interesting. He said, this is contradictory behavior, you know. Previously you heard that person who replied to you, but now you don't, you know, and now you're lamenting. It's just contradictory. So it's so wonderful, and it's just an amazing verse how Yamaraj is just cutting through and through and through and pointing at something that is obvious to somebody who is on, you know, that level of the soul, who has the spiritual realization of the soul. Whereas people who are so grossly, you know, identifying with the matter, or even subtle, as we said, they can't perceive that. Again, napashyanti, sapashyanti, napashyanti. You know, seeing things but not really seeing. That's illusion. That's just really such a gross, diverted misperception. Not really seeing the essence. So this is what we have to penetrate to. That's what we try to just completely remove that conception of just gross material bodily covering or even subtle, you know, and just try get to the soul. That's what Srila Prabhupada is always, you know, talking about it, trying to bring us to that platform of understanding our real existence on the level of the soul. And then once we start to act and, you know, relate accordingly, then we'll have spiritual and real and eternal experiences. And we'll really know whom are we relating to. Like even sometimes, as we were talking about realizations, I just heard one devotee sometimes back, anyway in the West, you know, sometimes they, some devotees are kind of curious about their previous life and lives and stuff. So he underwent regressotherapy. Regressotherapy is kind of a therapy where you kind of are brought back into your previous lifetimes, and you can kind of perceive that in some particular way. Anyway, so but one interesting thing that he told me about another devotee. He said we were together, you know, in 16th century, whatever, in some monastery, we were the priests in that monastery. But he said, I didn't perceive him as what he is now. Or you know, he was in a completely different body, but I just knew that this is the person. He is the one. So it's interesting. Okay, let's say maybe it's not on the spiritual level, perception of the spiritual, but even on the subtle level, you can sometimes feel the person, you know, even in that through that kind of experience, that, you know, it is that person. Although it might be in a completely different body. So even from that point of view, the perception of some kind of a different reality of identity can be obtained. It's interesting. So even when we, you know, like we relate, so what do we relate? Like when we relate to the, like we'll say, like, I don't know, like even sometimes we can like maybe talk about Srila Prabhupada, or of course Srila Prabhupada, be a little real careful here, his body was a spiritual body. But essentially, you know, even like, let's say, great acharyas sometimes appear in different bodies, you know. They assume different also forms, but it's not necessary that this is their original svarup that they, in which they look like that. Of course, descriptions of manjaris, you know, it's completely different. And of course, they have, you know, female bodies and stuff like that. This is their original spiritual body. But of course, when you relate to there something, you can maybe have that fortune to relate to them or whatever. It's not that you relate to any kind of body in a sense, but you relate to their real identity. Or at least that's the experience of the acharyas, or related to, or compared to this experience which I gave, it's something that somebody can perceive like that. So the idea is just to try to develop these different kinds of relationships on the on understanding of being the soul, not being even the mind, ego, or intelligence, or what to speak of the gross body, but really basing our relationships and dealings on the basis of the soul. And then definitely won't be any difficulties, misunderstandings. Then that's what, you know, can be called then kind of any kind of Vaikuntha consciousness or spiritual consciousness. So this is what Yamaraj is pointing out here, that, you know, lamenting for the gross body, which is lost, which is never has been practically even existing in a sense, because again, this temporary nature is just, doesn't make any sense. But understanding the real identity and really seeing the person, then we have to relate to him on the level of the soul, to really understand and have some kind of, any particular kind of relationship. Okay, so I would stop here, because time is out anyway. So are there any questions or comments?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhu, those living entities who are not able to go back to Godhead, after their death, are they getting their next body immediately?
Well, that duration of time that living entity acquires some particular body, it's not, as far as I know, it's not like absolutely specifically mentioned. So I don't know about it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In essence, yes, they don't, unless somebody commits suicide and has to wait for another gross body to be manifest. You know, in general cases, if the person remains in the material world, then maybe a few days or something, that's something that I heard, some particular period might be there. But in essence, they immediately acquire another body. Or they immediately enter into the womb to acquire some other kind of a body. So I don't know, maybe anybody, Vaman, do you know maybe? Is there any period of time that a soul acquires another body or something? I can't recollect that. Sometimes I heard different information, but what I understood usually is just immediately. There's not much time spent that is in between of leaving one body and entering another. Depending again if the soul has to go to the hellish planetary systems and what's going on, you know. So there may be different kind of, you know, circumstances. But in essence, if he still remains on this particular planet, then I assume, according to what I understood, that he would immediately receive another gross material body.
That's okay, Prabhu. Those living entities who do not get the body immediately, they remain as ghosts, correct?
Yeah.
And it is said
that they are sinful and commit sin.
And it is said that ghost is superior to human beings. But in what way?
It's not superior, he just exists on a higher plane. It's not superior, it's inferior. Because, you know, he's still practically on the material level of consciousness and he tries to enjoy the matter, but he doesn't have a facility for it. They just exist in the little higher plane. This is what it is. They exist in Antariksha region, which is between sun and the moon. This is the abode of yakshas, rakshasas, bhutas, pretas and stuff like that. Just beneath the heavenly planetary systems. This is their abode. So in that higher plane, and then Bhumandala is down where we exist. So it's not superior in the sense of consciousness or experience, not in that sense at all, but it's superior just on the, in terms of the plane they exist.
Since ghosts...
Of course, you may have different kinds, depends what you know, people sometimes refer to ghosts. If it's ghosts like the ghost who is punishable and ignorant, you know, definitely that's his case. But sometimes you may refer, you know, sometimes, you know, you can mistake demigods or somebody to be or acting like a ghost or some kind of, like some channeling kind of... circumstances or whatever, you know. So depending what, you know, that has to be clarified. What do you mean by, if it's sinful person, definitely is not superior to any kind of, you know, even human existence.
But this ghost doesn't have a material body, so they don't experience a material miseries. Is that correct?
Again, depending on the, you know, who the person is, whether it's sinful or not. Sometimes, you know, in the subtle body, people who are pretty pious, you know, they might, you know, they have experiences of very blissful circumstances and situations. But even then, you know, that's very temporary. They still have to assume grosser body. Grosser, even more grosser or less grosser, like a demigod kind of body. But that kind of experience, it's very temporary. Because Addiction. Of different kinds of desires, either they'll go to heavenly planets or they'll remain on this earthly planet and assume more, I mean, same kind of gross body. Yeah, is that...
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhuji, I wanted to clear one doubt. Does old age and disease exist there in heavenly planets also?
No. No, just birth and death.
Okay, so means all the planets which are above Earth...
Yeah, just birth and death.
Okay. So, like that...
Unless you get some special curse or something, you know, by someone, that's a different thing, you know. But in basically, there is no disease and old age.
So, here on Earth, there are four miseries, and above, there are two miseries.
Yeah, yeah.
So
everywhere, there are two. Abrahma, Bhuvana, Loka, Punarvartino, Arjuna, Maupete, Tukonte, Punarjanmana, Vidyat.
So, means in lower planetary system, are there more miseries? Like, we have only four.
No, lower, it's like heavenly planetary system. Lower, it's like heavenly. It's just enjoyment, but there's no conception of God.
No, lower, hellish planets.
No, hellish is different. You have our, you know, planetary, middle planetary system, like Bhumandala, where we exist. Then you have lower, which are like Bila Svarga, which is Svarga, it's heavenly, but it's just lower Svarga, which is beneath, where there is no sun, you know, that's beneath the Bhumandala or within the Bhumandala. And then hellish are down. Hellish are different. It's a whole another system, planetary a range of planetary systems where, you know, all kinds of these hellish things are going on. So it's a different. Yeah. Okay, Sundarananda Prabhu.
Prabhu, you spoke about these koshas, five koshas, covers the Atma. So can you explain a little how this Annamaya kosha, Jnanamaya kosha?
Annamaya is perception through, you know, like, through tasting, through food, through mouth, basically like food consciousness, you know, just animalistic consciousness. I can taste or perceive something sensual, therefore I exist. That's in short. This is why, like small children, you know, experiencing everything through mouth, trying to, you know, just through that kind of perception, right? That's all. That is their basic level, like pretty animalistic level, to through consciousness, that kind of consciousness. Then pranamaya, it's more like expanded, being conscious a little more about society, not just being self-conscious, but a little more conscious of, you know, your environment and others' existence and your relationship with them. And then jnanamaya, it's a little more higher, it's more philosophical, more intellectual, you know, like speculative or mental, you know, emotional and stuff. And then vijnana, we said, understanding, so having some spiritual, theoretical knowledge, difference between, that's where spiritual life starts, difference between soul and the body.
And then vijnanamaya.
Yes, vijnanamaya. And then anandamaya is just absolute spiritual bliss, it's already spiritual consciousness.
Manamaya is there.
Huh? Manamaya is same like jnanamaya, same thing, different term. So you shouldn't be confused with that. So there are five.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.